Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
Introduction. Derp. Dan's probably listening to this going, what about the introduction? Who's doing the introduction?
It was just recently proven in the Civ 4 community that it is faster to win culture using espionage than culture, which is pretty amusing. Somebody absolutely shattered the Hall of Fame culture record on Deity, I believe, using that.
What the hell? So what, they basically spy on a person who's going for culture?
What you do is you build up a ton of espionage, you get like three great artists. You bomb three of your cities with those great artists and then gift them to the AI. The spread culture mission gives you a 5% bonus percent of the total culture in that city. Because you bombed it, you already have a fairly high amount of culture in that city. So each 5% is going to be pretty hefty. But there's a couple other benefits here. You get the huge multiplier for having a ton of your culture in this city. So that's a big espionage discount. Because you're gifting it, it's pretty close to your capital, so that's going to be a discount relative to something further away. And then on top of that, if you found a religion and put it in that city, well, you get that discount as well. So with about like 30,000 to 50,000 total espionage, on a normal game, you couldn't win a culture victory that way just by spamming the spy missions and spreading culture.
A composite show, archive segments from previous episodes that got cut due to time. Recorded for episode 166 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jin, and Blauerfackle.
Say my name.
No one is around you, say... Okay. this other one is by Gaelic Warrior, and enjoyable posts, guys, my thoughts, worker replacements, this is an awful idea. One of the major things that sets Civs aside from other strategy games are the choices you have to make with workers and improving tiles. This is the key deep strategy of the game. Okay, before I continue, I'd like to point out that the suggestion would not change the decision framework, but it would change the micro, which he does get to. And he does point out that the microing of cities is important. And I think that's what you would really lose if you did away with workers and just like picked which tiles get improved next or which hexes get improved next and like did a workerless system, essentially, is you would lose that micro gain or loss that shows up from the proper movement and management of your worker turns. And, you know, worker turns are pretty dynamic, too, because you have to know at the rate at which you need the improvements, where you prioritize those improvements, and then try to make a decision planning ahead on how many workers you build, where you put, like, how you're going to get them ready, how you're going to get them in the position. That's one of the strongest areas of micro in Civ games. So it would be pretty jarring to remove them. You could do it, but it would definitely be a very different experience. And then stacks and limited stacks. The problem here is that you just bring back stacks and you make as many stacks as possible to go backwards in terms of strategy. I guess he was talking about putting some sort of stack limit. Is that what we were talking about before? I'm not like, he kind of has the answer here without the question.
Oh, no, it's the reference to should we do the limited stacks in Civ 4, I do believe was the question.
Oh. He seems to say that the removal of stacks was a major improvement, so...
Well, to Civ 5, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like he's talking about Civ 5 to me, but we were talking about like stack limits in Civ 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I'm a little lost as to what we're going for here.
I think we did venture into the Civ 5 stuff and stuff like that.
Okay, I thought we pretty well agreed that stack limitations and throwing in stacks and Civ 5 within the framework of Civ 5's design wasn't good, though. Like, I don't think anyone thought, oh, you know, you can have 10 knights on a hex now is a good idea. Right. Unless I just misremembered, but...
Maybe. I think we've brought it up a few times, because there was also the using command point style system for stacks, and there was a few topics recently about finding ways to manage stacks.
Yeah, it was episode 164. We were talking about limiting the unit stack in the context of Civ 4, but then started talking about it in Civ 5. And Gaelic Warrior initially responded to episode 161, and then I think afterwards realized, oops, I'm not actually responding to that episode. Because what had happened is Apocalypse 105 had responded to that thread. So I think he responded, it's like, oh, this is the latest thread for Polycast episodes, and then realized, oh, that was a few episodes back. So that's probably part of your confusion there.
Oh, okay. All right.
Recorded for episode 167 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Matt Chin, and the Observer.
Attrition on Civ 5. And the simple attrition mechanics that infantry number 14 user suggests. The mechanics is simple. Anytime a unit ends its turn in enemy territory, the unit suffers a small percent damage. The unit loses 1% health on grassland tiles, 2 on plain and tundra, 3 on desert and ice. Why? Because it'll add a small degree of realism in new strategies and combats. I kind of like this for the realistic touch. However, you do take damage from the cities.
Yes.
But then the enemy chooses who gets hurt.
If you were able to get rid of the attrition with, say, hospitals or other such food-type buildings, or like certain techs or upgrades, then maybe it would help in the early game to slow some stuff down. Although the percentages might have to be questionable. But at least we're on 100 health units now, so the idea is a little safer.
Yeah.
losing one or two hit points per
10%.
Turn.
Maybe one hit point every turn until you just die.
Yeah, that would be bad. You know, a hit point here, hit point there. Then you might make March and Medic promotions a little bit more powerful. But then we also have the Pillage for Healing now. So it's kind of like we might have to take away Pillage for Healing.
No, and Pillage for Healing could offset this attrition, which is somewhat of a realistic touch.
Well, no, Medic and March and stuff like that. Medic 1, Medic 2, and March more than offset this attrition.
Yeah.
And they're already in the game. But very few people take them that often. I mean, they're useful, but they're not like, oh my god, I really need those on a unit, unless you're running Cav.
Yeah, it does make the Medic kind of more preferable.
Hmm. Yeah, it would mean that you would definitely want some sort of Medic unit in your army to help keep units from just attritioning out in enemy territory, so not in neutral territory, obviously. That kind of is okay, but then again, we don't have seasons, so we can't really take too much on that. And the problem with that is like more on desert and ice, but what's the difference between desert and ice in somebody's territory when there's no one around versus desert and ice in somewhere else?
I think supplies. If you're in enemy territory, it's not that easy to supply as opposed to elsewhere.
Well, yes, it would.
It depends.
Well, we don't have supply routes in the game, and that's kind of...
Well, it's a strategy-level game, for the most part. So you can still make a representation of the difficulty of the logistics of supply in enemy territory by implementing a mechanic along these lines and explain it away as such.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not against it, per se. Some minor things might have to be adjusted, but on the whole, the idea isn't like, oh my god, what are you talking about sort of idea. It's actually implementable, probably. Yeah. And it might be useful. It also means that, you know, if somebody has like a few hundred units and they drop them all on your territory trying to suffocate you, then you might have a slightly better chance at surviving.
Yes.
I'm with Sonoril here, who actually has already reflected what's already been said. I always thought the City of Bombardment did a somewhat decent job reflecting attrition, which is why pillaging improvements to heal was a decent idea. I'm not certain about the way pillaging improvements, like every unit, that's pillaging improvement and heal, or at least the extent to which you can heal, that's necessarily a good idea, but the approach to that, the mechanic that in and of itself, I'm fine with.
I don't know if killing a unit or taking half of its health away is really reflective of quote-unquote attrition.
Attrition. That's our quote-unquote, hey, I've got this giant rock, would you like your head here or not?
I mean, it's kind of like being attacked by a unit, and yes, that I guess technically that's attrition. You're fighting a war, so okay, but I don't think that's what infantry number 14 is going for.
Yeah. Another way to deal with it, which Monther has brought up in the chat, why not remove the ability to heal in enemy lands without a medic nearby?
Ah, there you go.
which could work on the attrition mechanic and the supply line thing. Basically, you get zero for healing unless you have a medic, which the medic promotions can give you actually quite a bit of healing per turn. Now, March, I would say March or medic, because March is the auto heal, at which point you would get your standard 10. And that could be considered, and that actually would probably be more effective of a change than this particular one, war-wise, because then you can't fortify your pikemen in a rough terrain and have a city constantly shoot it down for 5 turns while you heal on their land without another unit nearby, and then let your, you know, catapult or bows shoot the city. It would actually remove that sort of thing without having special purpose unit trying to heal your guys.
And it would negate the need to introduce another mechanic.
Exactly.
That's true.
And it's really easy to change, because all you have to do is go into the XML and hit delete when it comes to how much you heal per turn in enemy territory.
You might need to put a zero there, depending.
Oh, you know what else is good for attrition? The Great Wall. Okay, I had to say that.
That would go great with this mechanic. You take 3% damage per turn as you approach the enemy city with one movement.
Woohoo!
The Great Wall can have a new effect of -5 hit points per turn to all units in its territory.
Yes, I'm the one that brought up the Great Wall. I blame myself for everything and nothing at the same time.
Recorded for episode 170 with Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, Alpha Shard, and Troy Goodfellow.
Yeah, reconfiguring worker behavior. Kim Adactyl was posting in Civ Fanatics about that, you know. Hey, apologies if this has been suggested before. In big empires, they always get frustrated at worker micro, especially when there's a big war going on. I usually end up putting them to sleep and forgetting about them. And I'll add, and then they run right into the AI and get captured. They propose, instead of or as an alternative to the current system, the player could mark tiles with the desired improvement, like trading post, mine farm, whatever. In match, you could designate like 20 trading posts, and the AI could automatically go around and do that. Huh. You should compare that to Dwarf Fortress. Yeah, and while they're at it, could there be a yes, I know there's an enemy 5 hexes away, shut up and keep working button? All I hear is a bunch of typing.
I'm sorry, I posted on that thread.
Yes, I see your post.
He's right posting. You could just tell us what you're posting.
Right. A couple hours ago, because I like the idea of queuing up more commands for your workers, and then you just, you know, leave them and go do their own thing so you don't have to micromanage them so much. And I remember in Civ 4, you could sit there, say, chop a forest, do an improvement like a mine or a farm, depending on what tile you're on, and then road, and then they would be busy for like 20 turns or something, and then you just do that for the next one. But this way, you could queue up even more, so it does sound like a good plan.
I think you should be able to do both. Queuing commands is not something that should be overly difficult to program into a game. It's not like you're changing an engine or something. Right. So, you know, that's definitely something that you should take a look at. But this stuff, too, auto workers are just awful. And anything that would make the game more straightforward, especially to players who are still learning or players who don't want to bother with calculating out worker micro, would be a great help. So, you know, this is one of those ideas that I like if you could set it up in a way that's intuitive and doesn't take a long time. Yes. I like the Dwarf Fortress references. Those are always good.
I think there's other games. You hold down shift, you click here, you click there, and there's a bunch of done.
Yeah.
Just let me plot out the things I want you to build, and you build them. That would be great.
And then you go away. And we don't talk to you anymore.
Yes, and when you're done, contact me. I'll give you some more work.
Yeah. I'm sure that's plausible within the system. I don't think anything should stop it from being able to do it. Unlike other suggestions that have, the engine's just not built to handle that sort of thing. In this case, I think it is plausible. And it would be nice.
Honestly, I don't know why they took that out in the first place. Although that's a little bit different from this particular suggestion. The queuing. The queuing really needs to be there. But this could be good too. In Civ 4, you could get your workers build certain improvements within a city radius based on what you told the governor to emphasize, I'm not sure if that still happens in Civ 5, but you could definitely make that aspect of the game stronger than it is right now. As it stands, workers when autoed are so terrible that like it's almost an unusable feature, but it's still a feature in the game. Like, it would make sense if it were made to the point where it's like rationally usable.
I think one reason that they might have taken that out or nerfed it, both the queuing and the auto, is this is unlike Civ 4, you know, you don't want roads everywhere, for one thing. You want to decide where your roads are going to be, you want to place them. And the cost of infrastructure is much higher in Civ 5 than Civ 4. It's a bigger drain on your budget. So to automate, for some players who might walk into that doing it at an early stage of the learning of the game, they might go, this is boring, I'm just building a road, let the computer do it. They might find themselves deeper and deeper into debt without realizing what the hell is going on. So that could be, I'm not saying I know, that could be one reason why they thought, we've made these changes to the game. If we automate this, we know the computer's going to screw it up because they always, always, always screw it up.
I don't know, what man. They build roads right now. If you automate workers, they will build roads. Yeah. So like being able to direct them to do it in the way that you want to do it, I don't see how there's a downside relative to how they currently behave.
Yeah. But the automate now, it's based on a straight line. You decide, I want to build from here to here, which is a bit different. Maybe I'm just not trusting it, because I've seen it do some pretty damn stupid things.
It'll do some stupid things, but
it'll do a lot of stupid things.
it's really bad. The barbarians. It will build roads, so not like it can't screw you the way it currently is. And if you tighten the controls of how automated workers behave, then it would be more usable and less likely to screw you rather than more.
How about that?
Do have to watch out for the build a road from here to there code.
Oh, gosh. Because
where you think it's supposed to build the road isn't necessarily where it's going
to
build the road.
I'm sorry, we need to build three extra hexes to go around this forest. Thanks.
Yeah. Or I'm standing here. You want me to build a road to that other city 5 tiles away. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take 10 turns to go around to the other side and build a road to a different city because it's shorter.
Shorter in quote marks.
Yeah. So we like the idea.
Absolutely.
So get on it.
Especially the shut up. It's 5 hexes away. You're not going to get eaten.
Recorded for episode 163 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jin, and Smallfish.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got all the workers, then you can improve lots of tiles, but...
But then you're building workers instead of something else, and you're probably improving tiles that you can't work in the near future also.
Who builds workers? You take them from city-states, you get one for free.
Why don't you get one or two for free from your neighboring civs or something?
Yeah,
exactly.
Who builds?
That's how you build workers.
All the things that seem to make it every single iteration of Civ games. Why is that still around?
What, the stealing worker from city states?
Yeah, workers steal,
or just stealing
not from
workers
city
in general.
States, but from somebody. Workers
steal
in
the
abusive Civ play since forever.
Yeah, exactly. Except now you can just bully the city state into giving you the worker. You don't even have to declare war.
I'd rather build them for the gold, but...
Yeah, milk them for the gold is better, but, yeah.
It's there.
It's there.
It's there.
Well, after you war steal the first one, you need another one, then you can just bully for the second one. That way you don't have to worry about all the city-states getting too mad at you.
Usually, I don't really find that to be effective, because if you're neighboring one of those diplomatic civs type like Greece or Gandhi, they're going to get really mad at you.
Well, they're going to attack you anyways.
But what I usually like to do these days, well, on level 6, haven't really tried this on level 7, is to just go at the civs, those major civs, and just steal their workers. And I get, free gold deals early in the game.
Yeah, it depends on how early you can do it. I know back in vanilla, I had a game where I stole 2 workers from China right early in the game. They're 2 starting workers. I stole both of them, and that was it for that for China in that game. With no double workers to start, they had to stop and try and rebuild, and they never got past it.
Ouch.
So, and that was on DD. So, yeah, worker steals on AIs is a good plan if you can get them. You got to be able to get them and keep them. Yeah. That is the key. Oh, yeah, and barbarians provide free workers. That's from the chat.
Yes, they steal them for you, and then you steal them back. So I don't need diplomatic bonuses for the AI I'm about to attack anyway.
Now, if you take that worker and you realize that, hey, this worker used to belong to this city-state, do you want to return it depending upon the city-state and what you want to do? You might want to return that for an early friend, if not allied, but if it's the AI, take it.
Yeah. Yoink.
Even if you realize, but I have too many workers, I don't want to be paying
I don't want them to have it.
Just delete it then. I mean, seriously, don't give it back to the AI.
Well, it depends. If you want the Diplo bonus, which might be enough to keep them from attacking you a little longer.
Pretty situational, but yeah.
If they're next door, you might want to do that, but if they're on the other side of another civ over there...
Recorded for episode 167 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Me and Team, Matt Chin, and The Observer.
Well then, we have a list of balance changes proposed for Civ 4. This is an interesting list, started by Miles Beyond. And I am introducing a thread that, if I read this one out, we would probably run out of time before we could discuss it.
Yeah, it's pretty long.
Yeah.
But it is one of these nice ones.
And there's a lot of proposed changes here. Some of them are pretty solid and improve wonders that are completely worthless otherwise. Not completely, but very close, like Chicken Itza. And others just don't make sense. Like, they're just way too strong or don't actually make it that much better.
Rebalancing.
It's a rebalance thread. So you change the costs of certain wonders and what they do. You change the costs of certain buildings and what they do. Like, for example, lowering the cost of observatories, grocers, customs houses, and hospitals. That's a good thing. Those buildings are all pretty crummy. Nuclear plant effective meltdown reduced to generating some fallout. Can we just get rid of the meltdowns, please? Please, please? They don't need to be in the game. Putting Trireme back to bronze working, it's a great thing to do for sure. That never should have been changed in the first place, especially when they raised the barbarian galley spawn rate. You cannot get metal casting before you get attacked by barb galleys, practically. Unless you oracle it, you can't do it.
Yeah, how are the barbs getting boats before you?
Well, I mean, they can get galleys and you can get galleys, but you can't counter barb galleys with galleys because there's no defensive bonuses other than a measly 10% on the coast. So the cost to stop barbarian galleys with galleys is prohibitive, but you can instead abuse the spawning rules and prevent barbarian galleys from spawning near you at all. So you actually use warriors and workboats to destroy the barb galleys, which is just why? It's bad design.
Yep.
Mech infantry at plastics, mech infantry kind of sucks, so helping them out a little bit is good. Great Wall plus 25% defense in all cities, so basically making it Chicken Itza, I don't like it. I mean, you still have the anti-barbarians, but you're trying to make it a little bit closer to the annoyance of the Civ 5 Great Wall, although it's still not there yet.
Yeah, well, it's actually more like the Civ 5 Kremlin.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you get that exact bonus, actually. Ish.
Except for the 25% in Civ 4 is not worth what it is in Civ 5.
Yeah.
You can bombard it away and it does nothing. Yep. Yeah. Shredigan Paya is good. I like this change. That wonder is nice, but it comes at a prohibitive spot. Having it earlier would allow you to do a little bit more with it. Temple of Artemis, one free specialist. Yeah, it's a slight buff to it. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Chicken Itza is still kind of bad, honestly. It's nice that you get more great generals, but it's still kind of bad. Angor Wat becomes almost broken. It's way too good.
Two hammers from priests and two priest slots in all cities. So now he did cut it from three priest slots in Wonder Cities. Now it's plus two priests.
Now you globally put two priests anywhere. You get good great person points from them, and you get more hammers from them.
Four hammers per city.
Yeah, well,
basically.
You have to run the priest, but if you're going that type of economy and you have representation and some other things, your specialists start getting a little bit too obscene. I don't know what to say about Hagia Sophia.
Well, it's engineers, not great engineers, right?
Well, yeah, but basically you can run four engineers there, and it's the only way in the game you can do that early. I guess it's all right. It wouldn't be imbalanced or anything. Just make it really easy to get the engineer for corporations. It's fine. Versailles needs that. The 500 hammer reduction is a very good choice on Versailles. Versailles is too pricey for what it does. Same thing with Pentagon, whatever. You get there, you build it, you get more experience.
Although double production with stone.
Yeah, but whatever. At that point in the game, you know, it's not like Civ 5 where you only have a couple cities. You're going to tend to have like 12 to 20 cities often, even on a normal map, if you've conquered anything by then. So, you know, throwing down that with a tech lead is not that difficult to do, especially because with assembly line, where you get the Pentagon, you get your factories and your power and 100% multiplier availability, basically, mm-hmm. for your hammers. It's pretty easy. And then your raw hammers is pretty high. Like a good hammer city can have 60 hammers base, and then you have 100% multiplier on that. It's really not that difficult to bang those things out. Christopher Dentor's steam power is very interesting. That's what lets you switch civics basically unlimited.
Yeah, I always got to start wondering when, you know, if you move wonders too early, then they're not really historically accurate.
No, it's not historically accurate whatsoever, but it will
be useful. Even in the technology required, like the technology of Brazil was still further along than steam power when they built it. Though, granted, you don't need any of those technologies to build it, since it's just a giant statue.
That's true. So, build it any kind you want. Although putting it too early in the game would make it rather ridiculous. Like, why be spiritual?
Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer the historical relevance.
Space Elevator is probably the most needed buff in the game. Firaxis completely derped when they switched its tech requirements in Beyond the Sword, to the point where I made a challenge thread on Civ General Discussions that has gone unanswered to this day. Show me an in-game situation where teching robotics and building Space Elevator does anything but slow your space race victory down. To this day, nobody has accomplished this feat on that thread, and it's been around for years, and people have tried. So removing the robotics requirement, cheapening it, and making it earlier is a very, very good thing for the Wonder. Especially because in Beyond the Sword, you can interrupt space race victories anyway by capturing a capital after they launch. So it's not like the game is over if someone gets Space Elevator. You know, if you're out tanking them and have good production, or you can just kill them or whatever, nuke them to oblivion, it's not like the race is over. Yeah. But it actually gives a point to building it, which is so nice. There is none right now. Three Gorges Dam, I would almost like to see that earlier, because it's by the time you can build it, you'll want to have factory and power everywhere.
Well, it's the big one, though.
Yeah, it gives power to everything on the continent, but by the time you can build it, you have power everywhere on the continent you care about, because you needed that as soon as possible. It's the whole point of teching for power and production. You either be in the game sooner than that, or you take advantage of assembly line, which is one of the stronger techs in the game. It does kind of make this wonder irrelevant in most games because it comes so late. Refrigeration is usefully closer, but even there, I don't know. Maybe it'd be okay there. I think we're missing a lot of things here, too. I would like to see a unit rebalancing, especially Renaissance should not just blow out to that extent. It's a little bit less realistic, but it's so tiresome to see everyone just get rifles or cavalry in every game and instantly win it, even on Deity. That's kind of grating, honestly. Elephants are way too strong, and he doesn't address them at all. So I'd like to see some unit balance stuff going on here. And some trait balance, because they nerfed Protective with patching out that overflow bug. And as a result, Protective and Aggressive are really bad, and Imperialistic isn't far behind.
No, I mean, keep in mind, he's mostly focused on the building, so I wouldn't hit him for not, you know, trying to change everything.
Fair enough.
All in one shot.
And some of the other buildings could use some help. Like, the market should probably be made cheaper. University should probably be made cheaper. This is interesting. A lot of people think Oxford's a really good wonder, but prohibitive cost of the universities actually makes it so that you can slow yourself down from winning a lot by building Oxford. Unless you're going for space, you usually don't want to sink the universities in to build Oxford. It's interesting.
But that's fine, though. I'm actually okay with that sort of design respect, because that means that...
No, it's too extreme in this case.
It could be too extreme, but...
only relevant to one of them.
It will... No, that's...
the game building. It's education you can get in the BCs if you're doing really well, but even if you're not, you get that well before 1000 AD. There's a lot of game in front of you, and this thing is completely useless in like 90% of games. If you're going to reduce the cost of an observatory, you might as well reduce the cost of a university also. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the wonders being more specific to certain goals, and that you don't just have anybody, regardless of the goal, just build wonders because, hey, it's a wonder.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of national wonders are like that because you get failure gold for them.
Yeah.
You say invest in them in one city and then build them in another city. And if you're industrious and you have a resource that boosts the production speed, you get a lot more gold than you put in hammers from doing that. even at points in the game where you otherwise cannot build wealth.
For National Wonders, Miles Beyond talks about, you know, Red Cross, that all units built here gain March promotion, was Medic 1, because everyone's got plenty of medics by the time medicine rolls around, so it was useless. March might make it more helpful.
More helpful, but still pretty useless.
Yeah, I don't have particularly strong feelings towards that. The one that I have a bit of a strong feeling towards, under city improvements, Castle. No longer requires walls, obsolete with steam power, was economics. I don't have so much of an issue with the changing of the technology that becomes obsolete with, but no longer require walls. I mean, in his description, he says, mostly just lowering cost to make certain buildings more appealing. Well, of course it's going to be more appealing. So instead of 50 hammers for a wall, at 100 hammers for castle, you're going to get plus one trade, plus 25% espionage, plus one trade route, plus 50% defense, minus 25% damage from bombard. It just seems to me, no, if you want that benefit of castle, you should not just be able to bypass the building of the walls first.
Yeah, I disagree. The walls plus the castle is what makes castles really obnoxious as a defensive building. If you only have the minus 25% bombard rate, it's actually inferior for defense to the walls, which are stronger, and it costs more hammers. So it makes sense.
But this is the point, though, that I think Dan's getting at. That all the castle's other abilities are being gained without needing to build that wall first.
That's fine. The benefits provided by the castle right now are crummy enough that you really don't care about building castles, especially because of the obsolete soon. But that's not the only reason. Those benefits aren't that amazing for what you're putting in to get them. You're talking about 150 hammers for something that's giving you a trade route in terms of economy? Like, really?
Yeah.
And an espionage bonus that, unless you're running the EP slider, does nothing just about? Yeah, that's really weak. That's expensive. I mean, you can get a 25% research multiplier from an observatory for that. And observatories are crappy research multipliers.
But if you need the wall to make the castle useful, then why remove the requirement?
Because then the benefit that you're receiving from the castle, other than in defense, is viable, perhaps. I still think it's a little weak, but it's basically a buff to a weak building.
But the thing is, he doesn't preclude the fact that you could still build a wall and get a castle. He's just saying you jump straight ahead to the castle. Yeah. You don't have to have the wall necessarily.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, because there'll be situations where you want both of them and situations where you only want one or the other. Well, you probably wouldn't just want the wall if you could build a castle.
But can you do that with every other building style?
Just about. You can build an observatory and a library, for example, and they don't require each other. University requires library. So it's not consistent across the Civ buildings. You can build any of the gold multipliers independently of each other.
Yeah.
So it's not like it destroys some precedent of necessary prerequisites in Civ 4.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point. If there are a necessity to the design.
No, it definitely isn't.
Not really always worth building anyway, so.
No, it still wouldn't be, but you might build it more often.
Apparently he's also trying to improve the ironclad.
Yeah, well, I think stuff. It's...
Isn't that a common theme across every single Civ game? How do we make the ironclad useful?
It's hilarious, because even with his bonuses to it, it's still awful.
Well, I think it's basically tries to make sure that friendly coasts means that ironclads can move a lot faster.
I guess it's a pure defensive unit then, which is better than it is now. It's not so slow that enemy ships can just run around it.
It's actually kind of true anyways. Even though ironclads could blow up frigates pretty easily, frigates would just, you know, oh look, there's an ironclad there. How about we sail out to sea and go around?
Yeah. The problem is, it's such a crummy unit in Civ as a result.
It was such a crummy unit in life.
But why put it in then? Like, it was very, 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 very short-lived on a historical scale and pretty useless. Why put that in? I'm sure they could have thought of some other unit that would have been more useful to have in the game and had more historical relevance than the Ironclad.
Hey, this game is about gameplay, not realism, people.
Recorded for episode 173 with Dan Q, Makalua, Kaya, Looney Boy, and Wild Weasel.
Previous patch versions started by Satoru, so totally excited about Brave New World. However, invariably when the new expansion comes out, this will mean a new patch for all users. This is always followed by a flood of people saying their saves are screwed up, or the changes totally messed up their economy, their marathon run is ruined, etc. I think what might be useful is to make the previous versions available via the beta
tab in Steam. This way, users who really, really, really need to play the old version can finish their games, then upgrade to the latest version once their marathon game is finished. Tomb Raider did this with one of their patches. Normally, I'm a big fan of Steam auto-updating all the time, but I figured this is one edge case where the auto-updating can cause real issues for users. It's definitely doable, and I think the pros outweigh the potential cons of the community being out of sync. And the out of sync would be a comparable situation to, I think, say, Civilization IV in Civ's pre-Steam days, where someone who wanted to play, say, like a multiplayer game, for example, with someone only had the Warlords expansion for Civ IV and did not have Beyond the Sword, and then that was incompatible. First, I don't think making it available via the betas tab in Steam is correct, if for no other reason than just the label. But I do think that the current system right now where you set yourself to offline mode is not very intuitive. I mean, part of the argument was arguably anyone who knows to change the beta availability option should be able to recognize which version they have selected, said Strudo76. While I think that's true, I think that the auto-update situation could be you're just alerted that there is a new patch. Would you like to download now? Yes or no. But then also at the same time, I'm thinking, remember for Civilization IV, for example, where if you wanted to play just a Warlords game, even if you had Beyond the Sword, for instance, you could go in and you could just launch the Warlords executable. Or, I'm playing Beyond the Sword, I don't want to upgrade to the 3.19 patch just yet. I want to continue with whatever the previous version was. So, in short, not through the beta tabs, but make this option available and make it intuitive to the user who would want to be able to do that, but prompt them and remind them that there is a new version and let people make their own choice.
Isn't there this under updates, the updates tab in Steam?
You have Steam will automatically download the latest version as soon as it becomes available.
Even if you turn automatic updates down?
If you set it to offline, it won't. But if it's a forced update, it's just going to do it. I mean,
really?
Yeah, I mean, if you're set to offline, it won't do anything. You'll be fine.
No, but there's a tab called updates, and you either have always keep this game up to date. Or
Yeah. You can check that too.
Yeah, if you do that, then it's just fine, and you take the other option when you're ready to get on with the new version.
Although, when you install Steam, is it not? It is selected by default that it's going to go ahead and auto update, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yes,
the game has made a choice for the user without asking them what it is that they want to do. Now, you could argue, well, people should know they need to be able to go into the settings and just, you know, it's generally in the same location for most applications and review all of the tabs and make decisions. But for something like this, which, as was pointed out in the thread, can cause a little, if not indeed a significant change to a particular game, that it's kind of one of those things where it's just like a little tooltip that comes up and you'd say, do you want to have games automatically update, yes or no? And that could also be, you know, if you install a new game, whether it's Civ or something else. And then there could be a little box that, you know, then says, remember my choice, make this the default. So in that case, the gamer is opting in as opposed to having to opt out.
I think it's something that Minecraft does well, for example. When there's an update available, the next time that you log in, it'll say, there's a new update. Would you like to download now? And if you click no, then you keep playing your game. It doesn't bother you anymore. And you can always go back and, you know, tell it to update later. Something for games that tend to drag on, you know, for sometimes weeks at a time. I think that could be a very useful thing when someone's in the middle of a game and doesn't want to, you know, potentially break it. I think that would be a very nice option to have to just present it up front.
Since nobody else is going to, I might as well step in with the devil's advocate answer, which is that it's a pain in the neck to support it from a publishing standpoint, and it's a lot easier if we just if the publisher just forces everyone to use the same version. Not saying I agree with it, I'm just saying that's the reason.
So, I also had that thought. I'm a software engineer, and I know it's something of a nightmare to support multiple versions out there at the same time.
Yeah.
And the first thing somebody's going to ask if they have trouble with the game is, are you patched to the latest version?
Yes, well, exactly. Then it's your own fault.
Problem.
You could attach it a couple of ways. You install Steam, you get a general statement. And then if you select that this is the default that I want, then that will remain the default until such a time as the user decides to go through the interface and opt out. But if they don't select that, then each time that a game is installed, they would get that question. And it could be a part of, like, recognize that if you choose the older versions, that it will not necessarily be supported, or you just make a blanket statement that it will not be supported. Then you could add to, you know, like a frequently asked questions page or a support page. If your question matches something that we already answered in the FAQ,
then it's not going to be answered. I mean, yes, that does put a little emphasis on the end user to do a little bit of research and reading before they contact someone. But I think at the very least, if that didn't minimize the number of contacts you got where you were dealing with people who were using older versions, because let's be honest, most people would rather just ask rather than read because it's faster for them, then you can just ignore them. And then if anyone ever questions, like, that was really rude, then you could just remind them at times, yes, but see our frequently asked questions. And I think most people would be forgiving and understanding that they would recognize, oh, no, the developer, the publisher, they already covered that, and they made it clear that they are only supporting the latest version. Whether you agree with that or not is an entirely other matter. It's like leading a horse to water. Giving the users the information, whether or not they choose to absorb that information, just like whether or not the horse chooses to drink, that's entirely up to the horse. There's only so much you can do to save people from themselves.
You have too much faith in the horse, I think.
And I'm certain I'll get hate mail. You're comparing me to a horse? I'll have you know I am more like a zebra. Well,
I'm more like a mule.
Or a graceful gazelle.
Sure, Mikey.
I don't know. We're going for plains animals here.
Not, whoa, not just a gazelle, a graceful gazelle.
Mm.
Recorded for episode 175 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Matt Jin, and Mega Bears Fan.
Funny achievement ideas started by Fetford. Just some interesting achievements that will be a fun thought here. Getting to the deck chairs first, as Germany be the first civ to construct a hotel. Dr. Jones wake up now, as America send an archaeologist into enemy territory, excavate a site, and leave enemy territory without being killed. The Da Vinci Mode exhibit a Renaissance great painting in the Louvre. Ugh, whatever. Louvre.
The Louvre?
Painting in the Brett Favre. In the Brett Favre. Spice yeah. Girl, as a female leader, capture three Indonesian cities that are on three separate land masses. I kind of like that one. That's creative. Mm-hmm. Ides of March, catch her the Roman capital on March 15th.
I like
not
that
Constantinople,
one.
As the Ottomans capture the Byzantine capital and rename it.
I like that one.
Actually, that's already in the Into the Renaissance scenario.
Well, there you go. Just bring it into the general gameplay, I guess.
Yep.
Fish for the week. Play a single game session for at least 10 hours continuously.
Oh, that's easy. Just turn it on and alt.
Yeah, just leave the game on.
Yeah, that one is, I'm just kind of like, I mean, achievements, you can cheat getting achievements in a number of ways, but that one is pretty weak to be able to say it's
achievable.
Legitimate. Yeah.
Yeah, just
put a few ideas from other posters in this thread.
Yes, as a matter of fact, there are. Thank you, Phil, for setting up my top 10.
Oh, boy.
Number 10.
Oh, God.
Phil, take over.
Thanks, Phil.
Phil, hit the mute button.
I don't have a mute button. No.
Number 10, Doomcrow. No mercy. Nuke all the Civ's capitals.
That's standard operating procedure for Phil, though.
Number 9, Phil read that already, the Ides of March. Number 8, from Zoithris, it belongs in a museum. Put an artifact in a museum located in your capital.
Yeah.
7, even though this is difficult to measure with regards to the playing a single game session, it's not so much for the achievement itself, but the name. Sleep is for the weak. It's the only reason it's on this list. I admit
Did you already complain about sleep is for the weak? So you're complaining about stuff that you're putting...
Irrelevant. Your list.
I was complaining about the achievement itself, but the name is pretty cool, so it gets on the list.
Uh-huh.
From Dino Yoshi 13, holy cow, as India found a religion in a city with at least three cattle in its radius. And then from Tetford, the Dr. Jones wake up now, which was already mentioned. Wolfpack, as Germany have a navy with 100 submarines. And then for third, the non-Constantinople one. For number 2 on the list, also from Zoithris, ICANN has interwebs. Research internet before anything there. Finally, also from Zoithris, my number 1 from the list of funny achievement ideas in this thread as of the recording. Where's Civaholics Anonymous log 1,000 plus total hours? In which case, I would get instant achievement right now. If
I think most everybody owns the game who hasn't just bought it like last week when it was on sale would have that achievement unlocked.
Yeah. Sony even made fun of the Xbox One and what Microsoft was doing during their own press conference. Like, hey guys, we've decided that if you buy a game and you give that game to somebody else so that they can play it, we're not going to charge you any money.
We're not going to watch your room with our little evil spy eye and charge you more for the movie you're watching if there's more than four people
in the room.
Yeah. Well, and they released a little video. It's got like the CEO of Sony and like the head of marketing or someone like that. And it's like a little how to share a PlayStation 4 game. And it's step one. And it's literally just the CEO hands the other guy the disc and says, here you go. And the other guy's like, thanks. And then the video's over. It's like all of 20 seconds long.
Oh, yeah.
That's impressive.
But yeah, the Xbox One, Xbox Live is not available in all countries.
Oh, man.
So all the countries that currently have Xbox Live, it'll just basically turn off.
Wait, even for the 360 and the original?
Well, we'll see about that. But I have no doubt that Microsoft will just randomly do that anyways. Because they're Microsoft. But probably it'll work for the consoles, probably. But not for Xbox One. So yes,
what are they thinking?
You too can buy an Xbox One and not be able to use it because you need Xbox Live Gold to do a lot of stuff on the Xbox One.
I was mostly meaning Xbox up until now, but if this shit stays the way you're saying, I'm going to Sony.
Yeah, it's due out this fall. There's not time to change much.
I mean, they can change things on the Xbox Live side.
What they could do is make it so that you can share without needing a code. That would not be a difficult thing to implement between now and fall. And if they're going to get competitively shat on, one would hope that they would alter their policy.
Yeah, right.
Microsoft.
Microsoft came out
their
saying...
Their entire marketing strategy seems to be that they're selling the Xbox One as a fancy DVR that also plays games. How Sony advertised the PS3 as being a Blu-ray player that plays games.
Yeah, it seems that this generation, they switched. Microsoft decided, I don't feel like selling this, so this is how I'm going to market it.
Didn't PlayStation even come with a lower price, too?
Yep.
Yes.
Just like the other time, yep.
And they reversed it.
I joked on Facebook that nothing makes the Wii U look like a legitimate console more than a Microsoft press conference.
Sad, but true. Microsoft just done so many horrible things. They basically said, hey, we're getting a dominant position with this Xbox 360 thing, especially on the Xbox Live side of it versus Sony. You know what we're going to do? We're going to try and push that monopoly so that everybody has to use our stuff. And Sony turned around and went, hey, you know what? There's people who play games on our console. Maybe we should make sure that they still can play games on our console.
There's going to be more people playing games on our console.
Well, that's the thing. Sony didn't screw it up. That's actually one of the weirdest things about this is that Sony, no matter what, usually screws something up PR-wise when it comes to a console launch or something else, and they haven't done it yet.
Or they did, and we just didn't notice because we were so focused on laughing at Microsoft.
No, they still haven't screwed everything up. Everything they're going on with PR-wise, Microsoft is making such a big problem, Sony's just shutting up. They're like, we don't actually have to go out there and try and sell our thing aggressively.
Because Microsoft is doing it for them.
Yeah. Like, we can just let them screw up and just say, hey, look, we've got a console for gamers.
What it's really going to come down to, though, is which console has the games.
Yeah, that's always going to be the case. But with Halo franchise getting shafted, i.e. the developer is no longer making Halo, that developer, i.e. Bungie, making Destiny.
For the PS4.
Yeah, they're making Destiny for Activision on Sony, on PS4. So it's like, Sony just went, well, we couldn't beat them, so let's buy them.
Yay!
Yeah, the PS4 seems to have better games coming out at launch.
Yeah, I'm just not terribly excited about either console, though, because their specs just don't impress me, because you can already get a medium to high-end laptop that matches or surpasses those specs. So I'm just not sure that the effective lifespan of these consoles is going to be worth the investment. Two or three years, they're going to be obsolete.
The PS4 is going to have a teraflop graphics card, and you can't get that in a laptop at the moment. So the graphics are going to be awesome. But no, as is pointed out on Facebook by somebody, the true winner of the console wars when it comes to this next generation is AMD. All three consoles are running AMD CPUs, and all three consoles are running AMD graphics.
Yeah.
So they got the CPUs and the graphics.
Yeah, the thing, though, about the PS4 having a better graphics card, though, is that that doesn't help them if all of the games are going to be cross-platform compatible, because then they still have to be developed for the lowest common denominator, which will be the Xbox One.
No, so they don't. Actually, that's not even remotely true. They're two different sets. You don't build it once and put it on both. You have to make a choice, and you have to change the code to fit.
But it's still, a lot of it is art assets and stuff. So if they're designing the art assets for, you know, lower quality.
They'll change it. There's, even in the current generation, you can see ads for the 360 version of the game has shittier graphics than the PS3 version of the game. And you can see that in their own advertisements.
Take the Mass Effect games, play them on the Xbox, they look like crap. Play them on the PC, they're beautiful.
Yeah, there's that too. PC always has the better stuff.
I enjoyed the report about how the company behind the Ouya set up across the street from E3.
Yeah.
And then the people from E3 parked this massive trailer in front of their display in the parking lot to block them.
Yep.
And I was just like, what the heck is this big trailer hiding behind here? If I'd been Ouya, I would have put like a sign in front of the – but anyway, I thought that was kind
of funny. Yeah, there was a few people set up outside and across the street, yeah. It was actually kind of interesting.
That's kind of funny.
Although the funniest thing was Elder Scrolls Online with Bethesda. Since you couldn't get into their booth at all, they set up a food truck. Please come visit our food truck.
Did they serve Dovahkiin dogs?
It was free food.
Free food.
Sorry for not getting into our booth, but, you know, if you want to come visit us, we'll give you free food.
Recorded for episode 176 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Canuck Soldier, Dragonall, Peach Rocks, and Travis, ATWA.
Civ 5 probably has the most relevant naval representation of any of the Civ
games. I always hated how naval was irrelevant. Okay, I like Civ 4 more. No two ways about that. But there are several features I really like in Civ 5, and I still think it has a lot of potential. The fact Navy wasn't useful except for the very late game, or maybe in some rare cases in the middle game.
It mattered in multiplayer, but it really didn't in single player and so far.
It really didn't, no. I mean,
well, don't forget those wonderful admirals. Those come in handy.
Yeah, those are good too. The funny thing is you can get a great admiral without having a coastal city and just puts it randomly. I lost an admiral that way to a barbarian galley immediately as I got it. I was not amused. But on a side note, you can send the admiral around the world without even having knowledge of astronomy. What is that?
That is some kind of admiral.
That is one great leader.
I asked you on a while about that. I always wondered if that was intentional, but it's never been changed, so I'm guessing it is.
I don't know that that's a fair thing to say, though, because Wall Whip Overflow and the gold from the protective trait didn't get changed until the final patch of Civ 4. And in doing so, they bugged Overflow, but that's another matter. But they literally left that in the game the entire time until that point.
Yeah, but that one's at least, a little, put it this way, I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it until it was patched. This thing is pretty damn obvious.
Well, it might be. It might just be a low priority, though. You cannot say that because they didn't change it, they intended it to be in the game. That's really not valid necessarily.
Maybe it was intended.
I would have been happy with Civ 4 with the Civ 5 graphics engine.
Yeah, no way. Screw that. I mean, the gameplay before the graphics engine. The graphics engine is why I don't play Civ 5 that much. It's so slow.
Yes.
Graphically, you find it slow, or are you thinking of the turn times and stuff? Because that's not to do with the graphics engine.
Times, but you know what, though? The turn times does matter, especially on some systems because of the rendering.
It's not the rendering that's killing it. I mean, it's not the 3D engine that's killing it. Obviously, if you're playing on something really ancient, it would be a problem.
No, I've gone from computer to computer and looked at the differences, and it makes a difference.
The one thing I found that is speeds up is if you turn down the leader quality, like not all the way to where it's crappy, but to where when they want to talk to you, it starts crappy and then gets better.
I turned them off entirely.
And it's still slow for you?
Well, mostly it's the turn times, honestly. Yeah, to understand, I'm not a normal player. I am well outside this demographic.
He plays RTS as his brain goes.
I'm familiar. I watched your videos for a long time before I ever even was on the show. Like, I know that you play quickly. I do too, but I don't know.
Say you're in mid-game and you give a unit an order and you want to click on the next unit on one hex over. I am literally spending more time waiting to click on that next unit and be able to move it than I am physically moving. And to the point where that gets backlogged, like if you're moving 7 or 8 things and you've already decided where you want them to go, you can lose 30 seconds on your own turn waiting to be able to move your next unit. That's a big barrier for me.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the graphics engine.
What does that have to do with? Because now you shouldn't be computing pathing for a human unit. Like
I don't know. But what I'm saying is I like the look of Civ 5 better than the look of Civ 4, but I like the gameplay.
Yeah, I think it is a graphic update.
Obviously.
But no, that's not why I play the game.
Well, that might be part of the problem. I think a lot of the code in Civ 5 isn't multi-threaded and probably never will be. We have these high-end systems with friggin' 4 to 8 cores and whatnot, and Civ can't take advantage of those.
No, Civ 5 is multi-threaded.
Yeah, I thought Civ 5 was. Sure
is. Graphics are, but not all of Civ 5 is.
No, I don't know for sure, but there probably is some gameplay code that's single-threaded. There's a lot of stuff that's just really hard to do if you want to do it, quote-unquote, right. I mean, if you'd like to, willing to have heuristic AI-type strategies, you can get away with a lot more. But the way I always did stuff is I'd have a background thread that'd be kind of acting like an observer of the AI, and then it would interject when it saw something. But it's not perfect, but it allows the AI to not have to put any AI into the pathfinding itself. And that makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, you have to admit, if you played, and I don't want to talk about Fallen Enchantress instead of Civ, but the turn times in Fallen Enchantress are almost instantaneous, even if you have 12 players, giant map. And that's because of that sort of thing. The AI is completely multi-threaded.
Interesting.
Well, the point is, basically, if you're spending more time waiting to be able to play a game rather than physically playing it, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And for Phil and I, that's definitely true with Civ 5.
And I acknowledge that we're in the minority with that. You know, that's part of our issue.
I acknowledge.
They don't need a game that runs quite at that speed. And so there's not a lot of incentive to do it or to worry about it.
No, I disagree. I don't think you're in a minority in terms of the speed. I think that most people play Civ 5 on small and medium-sized maps. Wow. And at that size, with only a handful of players, and at that level, those problems really don't come in too badly.
Well, we're pretty much forced to play on smaller maps and with 4 to 6 people in MP. Otherwise, someone with a weaker computer is going to time out. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Well, I get what you're saying, and I notice that lag you're talking about, like in between cycling units. But to say that you spend more time waiting to control units and playing the game is like, that's not true. That's an exaggeration.
That's
like,
only true if you also factor the turn times. But if you factor turn times and that, then I would say that probably about 2/3 of my time playing a game, unless I'm like really focusing on micromanagement, is actually waiting for the interface to let me to do something.
Well, how and fast would computer do you have? They have these 486s now where the coprocessor is built into the CPU.
Yeah, I mean, my machine's a couple of years old now, but even so, I checked the recommended specs. I'm on recommended specs pretty much.
And you're playing the DirectX 10 version?
No.
Well, there's your problem.
But why would that alter turn times?
Because on DirectX 9, they have to do a bunch of stuff on the CPU that in DirectX 10 is done on the video card.
I see. But you said most of the time is tied up in the AI unit choices anyway, right?
Well, I was assuming you were playing the DirectX 10 version.
Either way, I'll be able to figure that out because I can do that.
It probably does have a significant impact. You should never play DirectX 9 unless you have to. DirectX is horrible.
Thanks for the memo.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I guess I'll figure that out now. I'll let you know.
Why wouldn't you use the DirectX 10? Like, why would you default to 9?
I guess since the start, DirectX 10 was actually pretty buggy at vanilla release.
Yeah, that was for me too. That was
so
me.
So I never really went back to DirectX 10 because of it.
Yeah, a lot of that was video drivers at the time. It took AMD and especially Intel and NVIDIA a while to get their drivers for DirectX 10 to be able to handle what they do in Civ 5.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
It's been a few months since I last played.
certain there'll be people like, what? You haven't played the game for a few months because you realized Brave New World was coming out and you don't want to play an incomplete game anymore.
Exactly. The way I am, when I hear about new game and the new stuff that's coming out with it, harder for me to go back to the old one. The same thing happened with Civ 4 when I heard about like the stuff in the new one in Civ 5, like the city states. It was like hard for me to go back to Civ 4 and play Civ 4.
Well, it's even more than that, though, right? Because even though Brave New World isn't out yet, you're not interested in playing Gods and Kings because you know what's going to be in Brave New World.
Exactly. I want the trade routes. I want to be able to have my caravans going across. I just feel like it's going to be empty if I play it now.
Record dates assorted 2012-2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.